Welcome to Torat Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. This is Amy Horowitz, and today we're studying Yeshayahu Perek Lamed Vav. Perek Lamed Vav tells the story of Sancheiriv's attack on Malchut Yehuda and his attempt to seize Yerushalayim. Although these events have been referenced metaphorically many times in Sefer Yeshayahu, in the next few prakim, Yeshayahu narrates the events directly, without metaphor. This perek and the few that follow are nearly identical to the narrative of the same events in Sefer Melachim Bet. Although Melachim precedes Yeshayahu in the order of Nach, according to the authorship attributed to both of these Sferim, Sefer Yeshayahu was written first. That might raise the question of why this story is then repeated in Sefer Melachim. However, the books of Nevi'im Achronim, like Yeshayahu, generally contain very little narrative. Where the purpose of Nevi'im Rishonim, Yehoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, and Malachim, is to narrate the events of those respective time periods, the purpose of Nevi'im Achronim is to share the prophecies that a particular Navi received without necessarily telling a story. So the question really is, why does this narrative appear here in Sefer Yeshayahu? Abarbanel explains that because the different Sifrei Nevi'im have different purposes, the story of Chizkiyahu is told in both places for different reasons. In Sefer Melachim, the focus is on the kingship of Chizkiyahu and the events of his reign. Here in Sefer Yeshayahu, the focus is on the prophecies delivered by Yeshayahu and the fact that the words of his nevuot came to pass. As we look at the unit of Prakim that begins here, we will also try to focus on Yeshayahu's overall perspective and the role he played in the unfolding events of Chizkiyahu's life. However, in Perek Lamed Vav specifically, Yeshayahu doesn't make an appearance. Our perek begins with the confrontation between Rav Shakeh, the Assyrian officer, and Chizkiyahu's delegation of three officers, Eliakim, who was in charge of the palace, Shevna the Sofer, and Yoach, who was in charge of recording events in the king's chronicles. This confrontation takes place at the Ta'alat HaBrecha HaElyona, at the channel of the upper pool. Malbim explains the significance of this location. Chizkiyahu had just finished sealing off the waters of the Gihon spring, diverting the water into the city by means of an extensive system of tunnels, known to most of us as Chizkiyahu's tunnels. Chizkiyahu's purpose in doing this was twofold: bring water into the city to prepare its residents for an Assyrian siege, and block the water source from the Assyrian army so that they would suffer from thirst instead. This gave Sancheiriv a pretext for waging battle against Chizkiyahu, despite the fact that Chizkiyahu had just paid a massive tax, which included the gold-covered doors of the Beit HaMikdash, as essentially a way of bribing Sancheiriv not to attack Yerushalayim. Now Sancheiriv can accuse Chizkiyahu of rebelling against him by sealing off the water source, which is exactly the accusation Rav Shakeh makes as he stands at the sealed upper pool. Amarti, ach dvar svataim, etza ugvura la milchama, ata almi batachta ki maradata bi. I suppose mere talk makes counsel and valor for war. Look, on whom are you relying that you have rebelled against me? Malbim explains the basis for this accusation. Rav Shakeh says, Chizkiyahu's payment of the tax to Sancheiriv was just devar svataim, lip service, mere talk. Instead of sending that payment as a gesture of allegiance or surrender, etza'u gvura la milchama, you were busy preparing for war by sealing and diverting your water source. Maradatabi, this is an act of rebellion. In our pasuk, Rav Shakeh asks Chizkiyahu's delegation a rhetorical question. Almi batachta? Your allegiance with me was just pretend, so who did you place your trust in instead? Rav Shakeh then offers two answers to his own question. You either trusted in Egypt, your neighbor to the south, or you trusted in Hashem, your God. Neither of these were very good choices, says Rav Shakeh. He compares Egypt to a mishenet hakaneh haratzutz, a splintered cane or staff. Malbim explains the twofold insult of this metaphor, the reason why Egypt isn't trustworthy, according to Rav Shakeh. First, a splintered cane is deceptive. It looks like it has the strength to support its user, but as soon as you put all your weight on it, it completely falls apart and you fall with it. Second, a splintered cane is sharp and jagged and does more harm than good, injuring rather than supporting your hand as you grasp it. But even if Egypt does come to your defense, supplying you with horses and chariots to help you fight off the invading Assyrians, im tuchal latet lecha rochvim aleihem, can you even find enough soldiers to ride those horses? Rav Shakeh also mocks the idea that the Jewish people would trust in Hashem to save them. He says, V'chi tomar elai el Hashem elokeinu batachnu, halo hu asher hesir chizkiyahu et bamotav vet mizbechotav, Vayomer liYehuda veliYerushalayim lifnei hamizbeach hazeh tishtachavu. If you tell me that you are relying on Hashem, your God, he is the very one whose shrines and altars Chizkiyahu did away with, telling Yehuda and Yerushalayim, you must worship only at this altar. Of course, Chizkiyahu tore down the bamot because they're forbidden, considered avodah zarah. This was part of his effort to clean up the mess his father Ahaz made by turning Yerushalayim into a mini Assyria and the Beit HaMikdash into a shrine to foreign gods. And of course, Hashem is thrilled with Chizkiyahu's efforts. But Rav Shakeh twists it all around, suggesting that God won't come to the aid of the Jewish people because he's angry at Chizkiyahu for limiting the Jews' ability to worship Hashem at all those altars and shrines. Not only that, says Rav Shakeh, but I'm attacking you now with Hashem's permission. More than that even, Hashem amar elai ale el haaretz hazot v'hashchita. Hashem told me to attack and destroy Yerushalayim. How can Rav Shakeh just tell this outright lie? Rashi explains that Rav Shakeh assumes that Assyria's victory over Malchut Yisrael must have been God's stamp of approval. God must have wanted Assyria to conquer Israel, and if so, he must also want Assyria to attack Malchut Yehuda. Eliakim, Shevna, and Yoach then ask Rav Shakeh a favor. They're worried that the people standing nearby will hear Rav Shakeh's words and be afraid, and so they ask Rav Shakeh to switch from Hebrew to Aramaic. This seems a little strange. Rav Shakeh is in the middle of threatening to destroy them, and they stop him with this request? Why would he listen to anything they have to say, let alone do them this favor? The Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin informs us that Rav Shakeh was an apostate Jew. He had rejected his Jewish identity and observance and had become Assyrian. Rashi explains that Eliakim, Shevna, and Yoach are hoping that this will work in their favor. Even though Rav Shakeh answers to the Assyrian king Sancheriv, they're hoping that in his heart he still has a soft spot for his Jewish brothers. According to Abarbanel, it's exactly for this reason that they think they can get away with their request for him to change languages. Although their real agenda is to minimize the impact of Rav Shakeh's intimidating words on any Jews who are listening, they pretend to be concerned only with Rav Shakeh's honor. Since he was once Jewish, speaking in Hebrew identifies him as a Jew. Aramaic was the language of Assyria and the language of the elite class. Eliakim and company think that they can appeal to Rav Shakeh's ego by imploring him not to debase himself by speaking the peasant language of the culture he rejected. Perhaps this is hinted to in the Pasuk, which calls Hebrew Yehudit, the language of the Jews. Seemingly in response to this concern for his honor, Rav Shakeh then calls out in a loud voice in Hebrew, Shimu et divrei ha-melech ha-gadol, melech Ashur. Hear the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Abarbanel explains that he's shattering any possible illusion that he's still a Jew, even though he's speaking their language. He refers to Sancheriv as ha-melech ha-gadol, as if to say that the king of Assyria is even greater than God, instead of acknowledging God as the true king. Rav Shakeh then reveals his true agenda. He hasn't come to deliver a message to Chizkiyahu or to his delegation of officers, but specifically to make his announcement within earshot of the people. This is a tremendous put-down of Chizkiyahu. He's being dismissed. He rebelled against Sancheriv by building his tunnels, and so his fate is sealed. He will be dethroned, exiled, and possibly even killed. So what's the purpose of Rav Shakeh's announcement that the people will eat their own excrement and drink their own urine, because Sancheriv intends to besiege the city and therefore everyone will starve? Malbim suggests that Rav Shakeh is hoping that the Jewish people will revolt against Chizkiyahu. He took away their altars, and his rebellion against Assyria will cause them to starve. If the Jews revolt against their own king and join the side of Assyria, the conquest of Malchut Yehuda will be a sure thing. Rav Shakeh makes his agenda clear in three separate ways. Al yasilachem Chizkiyahu ki lo yuchal lehatzil etchem. Don't let Chizkiyahu mislead you. He will not be able to save you. Malbim interprets this as a reference to Chizkiyahu's army. In other words, don't be misled by what you think is the strength of your own army and your own resources. They can't save you from the mighty Assyrian forces. Ve'al yavtachetchem Chizkiyahu el Hashem le'mor hatzel yatzilenu Hashem. Don't trust Chizkiyahu when he tells you that Hashem will save you and your city. Malbim explains that Chizkiyahu might try to reassure the Jewish people that even if Hashem won't save them on their own merit, he might save them because of his great love for the city of Yerushalayim. This would be a compelling argument, which Rav Shakeh tries to counter. Al tishme'u el Chizkiyahu. Don't listen to Chizkiyahu. In other words, revolt. Rav Shaked then gives them the best incentive to rebel against Chizkiyahu and join the Assyrian side. Kiko amar hamelech Ashur, asu iti bracha utzu elai, ve'ichlu ish kafno ve'ish te'inato, ushtu ish me boro. Thus said the king of Assyria, make your peace with me and come out to me, so that you may all eat from your vines and your fig trees and drink water from your wells. Notice that Rav Shaked offers them to eat from their own vines and fig trees and drink water from their own wells. According to Metzudat David, this means that the siege of Yerushalayim will end, and they'll be able to leave their houses and the city limits to go out into the fields and eat fresh fruit and drink fresh water. This is, of course, instead of eating excrement and drinking urine. Rashi explains that this is Rav Shaked's lure. He's telling them that instead of relocating them, as Assyria was famous for doing with their prisoners of war, he'll allow them to stay in their own homes and on their own land, for now. Because the very next thing Rav Shaked says to the people who are listening is, Ad bo'i velakachti etchem el eretz ka'artzechem, eretz dagan v'tirosh, eretz lechem ukramim. Until I come and take you away to a land like your own, a land of bread and wine, of grain and vineyards. Ultimately, Sancheriv's plan is to relocate the people of Yehuda, just like he relocated the people of Yisrael and brought other cultures in to take their place. Sefer Melachim Bet describes this phenomenon. Vayavei melech Ashur mi Bavel umikuta umeava umechamat usfarvayim vayoshev ba'arei Shomron tachat b'nei Yisrael vayirshu et Shomron vayishvu be'areha. The king of Assyria brought people from Bavel, Kut, Ava, Hamat, Svarvayim, and he settled them in the towns of Shomron in place of the Jews. They took possession of Shomron and dwelt in its towns. This is what Yeshayahu means when he describes the arrogance of Assyria earlier in the Sefer, in Perek Yud. Ki amar bekoach yadi asiti uvechachmati ki nevunoti vaasir gvulot amim. Because he thought, by the might of my hand I have done it, by my skill, because I'm clever, I have erased the borders of peoples. If nobody's settled in their own homeland, then everybody is unsettled, reducing the risk for a rebellion from any of the people Assyria has captured. Rav Shaked then boasts of his conquests, Hamat, Arpad, Sfarvayim, and Shomron. Of course, mentioning Shomron, the former capital of Malchut Israel, hurts the most to hear, especially when Rav Shaked asks rhetorically, where were the gods of all these places when Assyria conquered them? While the people of Yerushalayim might not expect the false gods of Hamat, Arpad, and Sfarvayim to have saved their nations, the god of Shomron is Hashem. Rav Shaked makes a scary point. Where was God when Assyria completely vanquished the northern kingdom of Israel? Why do the people of Yerushalayim delude themselves into thinking their fate will be any different? And just as Yeshayahu predicted a few prakim ago in Perek Chavtet, saying, Vishafalti me eretz tidaberi, you'll speak from lower than the ground, they have no response to Rav Shaked's question, which hangs in the air and echoes in the ears of the nearby people. Malbim explains, even though the king had commanded them not to respond, they couldn't have responded anyway because they had nothing to say. So Eliakim, Shevna, and Yoach returned to the palace, kru'ei begadim, with their clothing torn, upon hearing God disgraced and degraded in this way, especially according to the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, coming from the mouth of Rav Shaked, a Jew by birth. This is surely a low point for the Jews of Yerushalayim, but we'll have to wait to hear the reassuring words of Yeshayahu until our next perek. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilui Nishmat Malka Esther Batzvi Yosef.